Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire. New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Gamma's Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Pelo de Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWineMaker.com.
Bangkok.biz.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Del Boar Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you, bus people.
Very enthusiastic.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit warmer, that's why.
Yes. Are we getting cold again?
Yeah, we are.
I don't know
what you call warm. We're not getting cold, but we're getting cold.
Okay. I heard storms coming in sometime this week coming up or tomorrow or something.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's
bad again.
Supposed to have a storm front going through us tomorrow. They say any time between 9 and 5, but this is the tail end of the storm that's supposed to be hitting Washington, D.C. in that area there. It's supposed to be dropping 2 feet of snow.
Mm.
I know.
Not good. That's bad. Did you get the information from Hermit Woods Winery that it's New Hampshire's Wine Week starts Monday?
No, I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, January 25th through the 31st. That starts this coming Monday, the 25th. It's Wine Week in New Hampshire. And they are celebrating with a special event on Saturday the 30th, and it's a big deal. And they're doing all kinds of stuff at Hermit Woods Winery. I think we talked to them.
We did, yeah. I remember.
Yeah. So that's cool. It's going to be a big event on Saturday over there at the winery, and it's a big thing in New Hampshire. So, that's awesome.
It seems an odd time of the year for having Wine Week in New Hampshire.
Yeah. weather and everything, or
yeah. It's just, you know, in the middle of winter, you're having Wine Week in New Hampshire. I guess
they're doing an in-depth tour of the winemaking facility, and a discussion of all things about wine, and a private vertical tasting of three vintages.
Wow,
what's a vertical
What you do is you have a Cabernet Sauvignon, you'll try a 2014, 2013, and a 2012.
Oh, okay.
And so it's a vertical tasting of one wine. It's three different vintages for one wine, and you compare them and see what they're like and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah, it says special private vertical tasting of three vintages of our Lake House White and Lake House Red.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't know what vertical meant.
Yeah, I didn't see that. Wow. Well, good. Thank you for bringing that up. I didn't see that.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. All right. And we're back.
We're back, yeah. Mike went out and got himself a car last week, so he wasn't with us. Speaking of cars, I was on the road the other day, and I'm going to bring this up, and we don't get much of a chance before, but I have to tell you about this. I was behind a car the other day on the road, and I looked at it, and it was an SUV, a small SUV, and I looked at it, and it was a Jaguar. And wow. And so the light changed, and I pulled up next to it and looked at it. It's a good-looking car, but, you know, of course, it's a Jaguar. But an SUV. Sure. I didn't know Jaguars made SUVs, but wow.
I didn't either.
So
that is strange. Huh.
You could have gotten yourself a Jaguar SUV. So.
Don't think so.
Only $130,000. You buy yourself a couple of houses, right? Yeah. Now, I don't know how much it costs, but a Jaguar SUV, I was, you know, I thought that was very unique.
I didn't know they had that. Okay.
I didn't either. So, you know.
Okay.
But Mike has got a new set of wheels now, and so he's cruising in style.
That's it. Show's over. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning in. I got some miscellaneous stuff. One thing I want to start out with, a couple of things that have absolutely nothing to do with wine, but I found this interesting and I always like to pass this on, basically because we've talked to a lot of wineries around the country that do fruit wines, a tremendous amount of ones that do fruit wines. And I got this little chart here I found. This is out of Beverage Industry Magazine. This is the latest issue of January 2016. And in it, they show the flavor trends and the top trends for 2015, what was the highest selling. The top berry flavors in 2015, raspberry was number one, followed by blackberry at 39%, raspberry 74%. Blackberry, multiple responses were allowed when they did the survey, so it's not going to equal 100. 39% did blackberry, 55% strawberry, 42% blueberry, 50% cranberry, and then there was other small percentages in there. But top non-fruit flavors used in 2015, again, multiple responses. Chocolate, number one, at 50%. Cinnamon and mint, both at 45%. Vanilla, also at 50%. And coffee at 42%. This was followed by green tea and regular tea, black tea, hibiscus, root beer flavor, cola flavor, and aloe. The top selling flavors of 2015, and again, you know, remember some of the wineries we've talked to. I thought this was interesting. Raspberry, 20%. Cherry, 16%. Orange, 16%. Blueberry, 16%. Pomegranate, 16%. Tea, 16%, apple, lemon, strawberry, all coming in at 14%, and coconut at 11%. And top fruit flavors used in 2015, lemon at 56%. You know, I don't think we've ever had anyone said they made a lemon wine, at least that we've talked to yet. That's one of the flavors that we haven't heard. Mango at 56%, cherry 53%, apple 47%, as well as orange 47%. Pineapple, 44%, lime, peach, pomegranate, all three at 42%, and coconut at 40%. And they're saying the anticipated top-selling flavors for 2016, raspberry, 30%, lemon, 20%, pomegranate, 20%, mango, strawberry, and tea, all at 18%, and blueberry, cherry, chocolate, and ginger, at 16%. So if you start seeing wines pop up with different flavors, and those are anticipated ones that are coming out this coming year. So just interesting, something else. And as long as we're not really on the subject of wine and some stuff that we're talking interesting here, I've got something else. As soon as I find it here, I've got my papers here that I want to talk about tonight. Oh, there it is. Scotland East. Now, again, this isn't about wine, but this is something that... Oh, my headphones are falling off. This is something I thought was interesting. I just want to pass on to you. Everyone seems to be talking about Japanese whiskey this year. In fact, we even said something about it on an earlier show. I can't remember when, but we mentioned Japanese whiskey. But the momentum has been going on, they're saying, for over 9 decades. This has led up to a selection of Suntory's Yamazaki 2013 Sherry Cask as the best whiskey in the world, picked by renowned expert Jim Murray of the Whiskey Bible. It sent shockwaves, obviously, to the world that a Japanese whiskey was picked as number one. Really surprised Scotland. It turned out that it wasn't the only major airline Suntory's products would get. Over the summer, the company announced that it was sending some of its whiskey into space to observe the effects of zero gravity on the maturation process. So, just something interesting. I enjoy a nice whiskey myself every once in a while, and that I saw that. But a Japanese whiskey, the Suntory's and Yamazaki, Z-A-K-I, 2013 Sherry Cask. Best whiskey in the world. Wow, what a coup for them. Other stuff to pass on to you. I don't know if I said this last week or not. If I did, I'm sorry, I'm going to repeat it. I almost think maybe I did, but I really can't remember. And I didn't go back and listen to the end of last week's show to see if I did. But the Big Game Train, the Napa Valley Wine Train, is offering guests a 36-mile round-trip journey from Napa Valley to St. Helena, California. And they announced the Big Game Train, which celebrates Super Bowl 50, which is coming up on February the 2nd, I think. I don't know. I don't have my calendar out here. So, oh, there's my calendar. Let me see. I think it's the 2nd. February, no, can't be the 2nd. 7th. Yeah, that's it. February the 7th is the Super Bowl. And so February the 7th, the Big Game Train, they're going to have some superstar NFL and Major League Baseball athletes and coaches on the train. Dick Vermeil, Vida Blue, Rick Mirror, Terry Hogue, Dave Wilcox, and Damon Hurd, and Sam Williams will all be aboard the train on February the 3rd, offering meet-and-greet opportunities during the three-hour journey. Executive Chief Kelly McDonald will curate a special four-course menu to pair with Vermeil Wines, which is from Dick Vermeil, who is a part owner of a Napa Valley winery. He's also Dick Vermeil's coach. Wine pairings will include the Vermeil Sauvignon Blanc, Dutton Ranch Chardonnay, proprietary red wine, and Zinfandel. Mayor will pour a taste of his Mirror Sauvignon Blanc, and Hogue will pour a taste of his TH Estates Gap Cuvée Blanc. So if you're out in California, February the 3rd on the wine train, I don't know how much a wine train costs. I think $75 or something like that, but it includes a meal and everything else. It's a pretty cool deal. So, you know, check that out. I had to take a drink of my wine. Let me tell you what I'm drinking tonight. Bota Box, B-O-T-A Box, Bota Box. You've probably seen them advertised. You've seen them all over the place and everything else. Picked up one. Give it a try. You've seen them all over, and I figured it was time to try it on sale at the local store. So it was a good time to see it because, hey, if it was no good, you're not concerned about wasting a whole lot of money. Let me read you what it says here on the side of the box. It says, the perfect wine for your next little adventure. It's a big, beautiful world out there, and you've got big, beautiful experiences ahead. Thanks for bringing us along. Nothing beats drinking in the essence of this thing called life. Thanks for choosing Bada, the perfect wine for your next little adventure. It's the original eco-friendly package. Nothing but good stuff inside and out. SFI certified, printed with VOC-free inks on craft unbleached recycled paper containing 90% post-consumer fiber. Bonded with cornstarch instead of glue and 100% recyclable. That's the outer box. Inside the wine bag is BPA-free. Both it and the spout are Category 7 recyclables. Cool. It starts with deliciousness. We work hard to make sure Bada offers the perfect wine for any occasion, and we're proud to offer award-winning vintage-dated varietals. And this is vintage-dated. It's the 2014 Cabernet Sauvignon on it, actually vintage. Whether you're relaxing poolside, tableside, or mountainside, we have a wine for you. It lasts and lasts. Sure, it's fancy, but our state-of-the-art Flex Tap, which is the little squeeze the button, pour tap technology, helps our wines last more than a month after opening. When we banish wine's enemies, light and air, we let the flavors dance on and on. Take us anywhere. No, really. Thanks to our compact, portable, shatterproof box, you can enjoy premium wine anytime, anyplace. Bada is fine to store on your countertop or in the fridge. It also says, taste the adventure. Aromas of black cherry and red currant are balanced by hints of cedar and vanilla in this delicious Cabernet Sauvignon. I do get the red currant and hint of black cherry in it myself. Not picking up a whole lot of vanilla, though. The boisterous finish is marked by notes of ripe cherry, plum, and vanilla. And again, I can pick up a little bit of the plum and cherry, but not much vanilla. Supple yet medium-bodied, enjoy this wine by itself or pair with heartier fare like Hungarian goulash. And when I read that, I was excited because I haven't had any Hungarian goulash in ages. Or dry-aged sirloin. And they take a bow. Best Buy Wine Enthusiast 2011 Cabernet Sauvignon. They were rated as Best Buy. And they also say, share your story. How do you enjoy Bada or Bada? Let us know at facebook.com, BadaBox, or BadaBox.com. And it says, follow us on Twitter. Twitter. I was just corrected by my engineer in the back. This is made and bottled by Vincent, bottled by Bada Box Vineyards in Manteca, California. I don't know where Manteca is, but California wine. But it's good. It's probably one of the better box wines that I have ever had the opportunity to try, and I have tried different ones just because people are always trying them, and I just want to be able to talk to them about them intelligently instead of saying, oh, I don't know. So it's not bad, really. It keeps saying vanilla. I'm not picking up vanilla, and I'm not getting a lot of oak, which usually is translated into vanilla, but I'm not getting a lot of vanilla. A little bit of oak, a little bit lighter. After it's been in the glass for a while, the aroma is coming out better. The aroma does give you hints of the cherry and dark berries, blackberries and stuff like that. It's good. It's, you know, for the price, it's pleasant and it's worth it. I mean, it's a 3-liter box, but I'm always telling people there's nothing wrong with boxes anyway. Most of the wines you're buying are within this price range, and the box just gives you a opportunity to have it in one place, and especially if you're living alone or something like that, a box wine is great because it's not going to go bad on you. Moderation, obviously. So that's what I am enjoying tonight while I take another drink here. Good balance, too. It's got a good balance with the acids and stuff. It's not overpowering. It's really a nice balanced wine. So bought a box. Moving on, a new red. Austerity Pasaropos Cabernet Sauvignon. It's distribution is national, so you can find this anywhere. O'Neill Ventures and Distillers Austerity line launched a new Pasaropos Cabernet. Cabernet Sauvignon. The Cabernet Sauvignon features ripe cherry aromas followed by licorice and sweet oak. Well, that would be different. Additionally, the layered palate features bright red fruits with a bold framework of structured tannins. The depth of flavor is underscored by a long finish it adds. 13.5% alcohol by volume. It's available at a suggested retail price of $17 for a 750 milliliter bottle. Austerity has two other wines in their lineup, Austerity Arroyo Seco Chardonnay and Austerity Santa Lucia Highlands Pinot Noir. So there's those wines in that. Another wine, Saint Mayhem. This is also national distribution. Sweet with some heat. It's advertised as Art Farm Wine. Will roll out, and this is from Art Farm Wine, Napa, California, will roll out its Saint Mayhem line of wines. Actually, they're rolling them out now, early 2016, so they should be coming out on the shelf soon here. Saint Mayhem Sauvignon Blanc offers tropical notes of lemon, pineapple, and citrus, while the jalapeno and habanero peppers warm the back of the palate as the finish lingers. Well, that's interesting. The Merlot with coffee and jalapeno offers bright fruit with a touch of jalapeno while the coffee is evident on the nose and adds a mocha note in the rich tannins. Additionally, a Chardonnay with peach and ginger also will be available. The wines will be packaged in 750 milliliter bottles, suggested retail price of $25 each. A little steep to try out and see what they're like. For most people, I'm just saying, $7 to $15 range is the comfort range for most people. When you get up to $25, I don't know how well it's going to sell, but maybe if you try it. If I see one, I'll pick it up and give it a try. Jalapeno and habanero, that's interesting. And coffee and jalapeno, or jalapeno, and the cab, interesting. Here we go. This I thought was interesting too. This is Barra Capri. This is out of Italy. Distribution is in select markets, so it might not be available in your market, but if it is, good. Hope so. It is called the Wine of Beers. La Barra di Capri now is offering its self-titled Italian luxury craft beer in select markets in the United States, often called the wine drinker's beer. It is soft, light, and refreshing. The beer offers a light aroma with hints of fruit on the nose and creamy, malty flavors of apple, plums, and honeycomb. The beer is available in a 330 milliliter and a 750 milliliter glass bottles for a suggested retail price of $9.49 and $16.99, respectively. They also have a 1.5 liter available at $28.99. It is distributed by Costa Mesa, California-based Airway Imports, and it should be available in Los Angeles, Chicago, Orange County, California, and it will launch in Florida, Hawaii, Minnesota, Nevada, Tennessee, and all of Texas throughout 2016. So Interesting. The Wine of Beers. It might be something that's a little bit different, a little bit interesting there. And Llama Bernarda, Cabernet Corporation of Novato, California. Distribution is national on this. Cabernet Corps released is Llama Bernardo, an amalgamation of two of the company's most renowned varieties, Bernarda and Malbec. The blend offers the flavor of ripe strawberries and a soft, persistent structure, it says. The wine is aged in three-year-old French oak barrels for a minimum of 6 months and then blended in the bottle and aged for an additional 6 months. 750 milliliter of bottles, nationwide distribution at $13.99. So, Bernarda, that would be an interesting varietal just to try itself. It doesn't break down the percentage, though. But that is available out there also. I saw this also. This is, again, out of the Beverage Industry magazine. Just a little quick article here. It said that study finds wine becoming less formal. Whether relaxing at home, dining in a restaurant, or celebrating with friends, American consumers are enjoying wine in a wider variety of occasions. Commissioned by Modesto, California-based E&J Gallo Winery, they found that 85% of frequent wine drinkers now consider wine to be an appropriate beverage for casual and formal settings alike. They surveyed over 1,000 wine drinkers ages 21 to 64 and followed up with the same people 2 years later. And they found that the survey found that even though Americans are bringing wine into a growing number of occasions, frequent wine drinkers still stick to what they know. When presented with a list of 40 wines across a wide range of prices, the indicated that they purchase an average of 3.2 brands on a regular basis, which is the ones that they choose all the time. I refer to it as their default wines. Everybody has their default wines, and that's what happens. Showed a variety of a diverse range of styles and packaging and sizes, though. That's something that the wine industry is excited about. It doesn't have to just be in a 750 milliliter bottle. It could be in almost anything. Hence, I bought a bottle box. 82% of all frequent wine drinkers enjoy between 1 and 5 glasses a week. The survey also found that millennials are twice as likely to drink wine when socializing with friends, whereas baby boomers are 50% more likely to drink wine during a family meal. Survey also asked about common fears among wine drinkers. Overall, frequent wine consumers didn't claim to have any concerns, and 42% of all survey respondents acknowledged that wine is becoming less formal. It was conducted by Miami, our Maine-based Liberin Research and Consulting. So that, we pretty much know that, don't we? I mean, we didn't have to have a survey to tell us that wine is becoming less formal. We know that because we drink it just about any time, anywhere. And, the wineries are popping up all over the place, so people do that. A common cause. Two competing excise tax reduction bills are going through the houses now. Representatives, excise tax. Every winery pays an excise tax monthly. We pay a state excise tax and a federal excise tax, depending on how big you are. Most small wineries in the country is full of small wineries over big ones. Most small wineries pay it quarterly or every 6 months or every year. It depends on what they want to do. You can do it either way. Any of the options are available. Also, every 2 weeks, every 2 weeks, every quarter, which they're not allowed to do it monthly, which when I first started, I kept doing it monthly, and I did it monthly for about 5 years, and they finally called me and said, you can't do it monthly. And I said, I've been doing it monthly. And they said, well, you shouldn't. I said, well, nobody told me. And they said, well, you're going to have to fix that. And so I had to do a whole bunch of paperwork every 2 weeks between in there to catch up with the monthly to be sure that it was what the government wanted. And that only took me like forever to catch up and do all the paperwork and everything in there. But they were satisfied and they were happy, and it didn't cost me anything except time. But this new bill, they're saying that it's a for breweries and craft beverages and all that. They're given a break. The first 60,000 barrels of brewery produces a minimum of 2 million gets a half of the previous rate of $7 per barrel. And it's not until you get on up above 6 million barrels that it stays at the higher rate. So they are pushing that through Congress now, and that should be good for everybody in the business. Might save us a little bit of money every month, or every not month, every 2 weeks, or every quarter, or every half year, or every year. China's expanding their vineyards. And we know that. We've heard that. I've talked about it. I've said things about it and all that. But China's going crazy on expanding their vineyards now. When China decides to embark on a project, it usually does it big time. Recently, they're beginning planning for potential wine production. The production still lags behind a lot of other countries. France is still number one in wine production. But the amount of land it has begun to cultivate by planting mostly imported grapes has now surpassed France in China, according to the International Organization of Vine and Wine. Since 2001, it has more than doubled its land devoted to vineyards in China. At last count, China had 10.6% of the world's wine area, compared to France's 10.5%. And the number one country, Spain, has 13.5%. By increasing its wine-producing area, China is trying to meet a growing demand for red wine among its population. They're importing a lot of wine. They're trying to do it there. In 2013, it became the number one consumer of red wine in the world. Wow. But much of its production area is still being used to grow table grapes and produce dried fruit. So even though they have all that land and everything, it's still being used to produce, not wine grapes. No worry packaging. We've all been faced with the conundrum before, whether to open that bottle of wine when we just know we're not going to finish it on the table before it spoils. The solution has been bag in a box, which allows consumers to enjoy what he or she wants right away and not have to worry about it. Their small format box is becoming the big option. The newest one is Shoal IPN Reserve. Comes in a sizes ranging from 1.5 to 3 liter and offers premium wine drinkers the option of doing a daily bottle brand quality that comes in a box. It also allows wine drinkers the ability to bring their wine to places where glass might not be allowed or appropriate. Examples, boating, pools, camping, tailgating. Also, it lowers the carbon footprint. The company's small format BIB for spirits is called Shoal IPM Proof. And it also, shows pictures of Griffin Pult, which is vodka in a box. And other spirits are available in a box. And also, and on this particular article, has a picture of the Boda box. Only this one, the one I have here is a 3 liter, and this one is called the Boda Brick. I guess it's Boda. Boda? 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 I don't know. Boda. This is called the Boda Brick, which is a 1.5 liter. So, alternative packaging, a great thing now, and we've talked about alternative packaging a lot, so it's nothing new to my listeners out there because they have heard me talk about alternative packaging. K California sparkling wine marketed for wedding toast. Blanc de Bleu, for something blue. Advertising it big time. Cuvée Moussant. You can check it out on blancdebleu.com, BlancDeBleu.com. It's a Blanc de Bleu Cuvée Moussant Brut. Anyone who's familiar with popularity of wedding-themed reality shows, say Yes to the Dress or Amazing Wedding Cakes, to name a couple, knows that weddings are big business. I actually worked as a wedding photographer for many years. Weddings are a big business. It's hard to explain to you how big a business weddings really are. If you've ever been involved in a wedding, or if you've ever had to pay for a child's wedding, or if you've ever checked anything out, they are big business. There's a lot involved with it. And I worked as a photographer, and I saw all aspects of it, and it's just amazing. So it's no surprise that a California sparkling wine brand that markets itself as the quintessential bubbly for wedding toast has really been quite successful. Cole Osito from Premium Vintage Cellars created Blanc de Bleu Cuvée Moussée back in 2006 with wedding celebrations in mind, yet the bubbly has a unique twist. The wine's name, Blanc de Bleu, highlights its vivid blue shade, and it has a hint of blueberry flavor. For brides, the wine's unique color fulfills the last part of the traditional something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. Actually, that's not the last part. The actual last part is, and with the sixpence in the shoe or a penny in the shoe. That's really the last part. But blue champagne doesn't get the cost. I haven't seen a cost anywhere on those stuff. I guess check out the website if you're curious and you want to try it. Hints of blueberry, though. Premium Vintage Cellars. Marketed by Bronco Wine Company, Bronco being one of the biggest in the country, actually. Sparkling grape wine with natural flavors and certified color. So that's what they're saying on that. So something else to check out there. Social media. I think Mike probably is texting. Are not texting, but tweeting, even as we speak on this show. He usually does, and we usually get some people jump in there and forward it and all that. Social media is really spreading names for wines, beers, and liquor. 15% of the tweets of wine has been passed on, has been used. Booze chatter picks up throughout the day. You're finding that peaking at around 8 o'clock at night, whenever you're tweeting and stuff, booze chatter is the high there. Obviously, the lowest is when people are asleep at 4 a.m. Mountain Time. But it's a tremendous amount of chatter on liquor, beer, and wine out there. I saw this today. I thought it was cute. I will go over this quickly with you, and then I will type it into the Facebook page because it is cute. This is, I don't know who wrote this originally, but it says, "It's taken me many months of my retirement time, but we just finished building a new medicine cabinet in our new kitchen. During a visit to the museum at the Royal College of Surgeons, I noticed how many specimens were preserved in alcohol, which gave me this flash of inspiration. Why pay a fortune to be embalmed after death when it is so pleasant to do it while still alive?" So, he came up with this formula. If you have a disease, any disease, wine. Daily dose. So this is what we, here's the diseases, here's the wine, and here's the daily dose to help you combat them. Acne, Cabernet Franc, one glass a day. Anemia, Barbera Dolcetto, two glasses a day. Allergies, Pinot Noir, 1 glass. Bronchitis, Brunello Cabernet Sauvignon, 2 glasses. Constipation, Chardonnay, 2 to 4 glasses. Cholesterol, dry champagne, 2 to 4 glasses. Diabetes, Beaujolais Nouveau, 1 to 2 glasses. Diarrhea, Champagne Sec, 1 bottle. GERD, or acid reflux. Burgundy or Sensei Rouge, 1 to 3 glasses. High uric acid or gout. Sensir or Puy Fumé, 2 glasses. Hypertension. Alsace or Sensir, 4 glasses. Hypertension would probably do that. Menopause. Grenache or Syrah, 4 glasses. Depression. Medoc or Tempranillo, 1 to 3 glasses. Bladder infection, Sangiovese, 1 to 3 glasses. Obesity, Syrah, 1 bottle. Rheumatism, Malbec or Merlot, 1 to 2 glasses. Sleep apnea, port, 1 glass, which is 4 ounces. And poor memory, any of the above doesn't matter. So there you go. Different medications that have been embalmed with alcohol at the end of your life. It is much better to do it while you're still alive. So I'll post that up on the Facebook pages for kicks, and y'all can take a look at that there and run a chart for yourself so you know what you should be drinking at what time and when. A few other things I want to talk about tonight. This is a headline I saw on Decanter magazine. Iran bans the word wine in books and reports. Iran's culture ministry has reportedly banned the use of the word wine in books as part of a new set of restrictions on writers and publishers. The head of the book publishing, Mohammad Selgi, has outlined new censorship rules, which means that wine and names of several foreign animals are removed from proposed publications. It doesn't give the names of the animals. If you're interested in that, I don't know. All the books proposed for publication have to be approved for content by the Iranian government. And so anything, consumption of alcohol is now banned, what has been in Iran's Islamic Republic. But there have been many reports of wine, beer, and spirits being smuggled over into the country over the borders. And discussion with Iran about the extent of underground drinking has become quite serious. Local media reports last year that around 150 government centers would be set up across the country to deal with alcohol abuse. And the Ministry of Culture stance references in the wine contrast to the days before the Islamic Revolution of 1979, where it was estimated that there were over 300 wineries openly operating in the country. Now there are none. Winemaking in that area dates back thousands of years, and a common legend says that Syrah originated in now modern-day Iran, but the Syrah grape, as a variety is known, was actually thought to be a descendant of native French grapes. But even the reference of the word wine is being eliminated from the Iranian books and all that stuff, which, you know, oh well, no editorializing needed on that stuff, really, does it? Okay, let me get this out of my way here. Let me pull this next one up here. And there we go. This mouse drives me nuts. Italy has reclaimed its spot as the world's biggest wine producer from France. Italy was the number one wine producer for a long time. France took over that title. Italy is now jumping back in there. Wine output to rise 2% in Italy as Spain is sliding down in the production. Italy trumps France as the biggest global producer at about 48 million hectoliters. France is just right behind it at about 47, 46.5. Spain is around 35 million. U.S. is fourth at about 22 million. Then Argentina, Chile, Australia, South Africa, China, Germany, and Portugal. So it is, Italy can take a bow again. They are reclaiming the spot as the world's biggest wine producer. Something I saw here too, climate change. We've talked about it and what's going to happen and what's happening with grapes and how Napa may not be Napa as we know it in the years to come. It may move up north in the Willamette Valley and all that. This article, published by Reuters magazine out of Paris, said that the wine industry as we know it is going to survive. It's not, they're changing the grape varieties, the new winemaking techniques. Their harsher weather is hitting the vineyards across the globe, but the wine producers all over the world have adapted to the changes, and the plant has the capacity of adjusting to what's going on and to find other plants and different things that will survive in it. China has more than 80% of production acreage located in regions where temperatures can drop below minus 30 degrees Celsius, which is minus 22 degrees Fahrenheit in the winter. Growers cover the vines to protect them and uncover them in the spring, and they're having no problem. Winemakers are shifting the way that they're doing stuff. Australian Treasury Wine Estates, for example, is now testing technology to water vines underground and to expand the fermentation capacity to combat climate change. So instead of dripping water, they're doing it underground. Since the wine grapes do have a tendency to be able to seek out water, do it as an underground thing. The outlook, notably in the Champagne region, was not that there was very much of a concern of a future of wine sold under the protected designations. There are other strains and cultivation techniques, and so they're not really worried in the short term or even a midterm on the question of what they're going to do with climate change as a whole. It was too early to give an outlook for 2050, and this has always been the lookout point for what's coming up in the future, 2050. But I said that the global wine output was rising 2% a year, which is not going to make a big difference. 10% rebound in Italy's output means that it's regained its position of leader. I just mentioned that. And the weather is not affecting the crops greatly at all. So this latest report here out of France, actually this is out of France, from the Globe and Mail, M-A-I-L, Globe and Mail, is basically saying that seems like wineries over in Europe and that area there are not concerned at all about climate change. It's not anything that they think that they should be, you know, really crazy about or going nuts about. Saw this too. More wineries opening in Florida. And since this program is here in Florida, and I have a winery in Florida, it caught my eye. Florida's citrus industry is declining because of different problems. We are having problems in Florida, major problems with citrus dying and stuff. But the wine industry, they're saying, is growing. The U.S. has been the world's largest wine market since 2010, with wine sales totaling $37.6 billion. And it is all over the country. 1.9 million gallons is by Florida wineries. Florida is now the ninth largest producer of wine in the country. In 2005, Florida only produced 296,419 gallons, which I was part of those numbers. How? Wow, 2005. The state's wine industry is an $895 million economic impact on the state. The wine industry is responsible for 6,417 full-time jobs, $195 million in wages, and $207 million in tourism. And the local wine industry is growing. They're talking about this. Gary Farmer has opened up Fiddler's Ridge Farm and Winery in Lake Wales, which is over toward toward Orlando, a little bit more so that part of the state over south of Orlando. He does a blueberry honey wine, a peachy sweet peach wine, and a semi-sweet blueberry wine, and a buzzin' bee honey wine. Those are what he has available. But the wine industry in Florida as noted by this this article here, is growing. There is Pierce disease, which thrives on grapevines and high humidity, say, although high humidity is not just the reason for Pierce disease. That's sort of misleading. Muscadine grapes grow wild in Florida. It's a varietal that people know well, and there's a lot of wineries in Florida that actually use the muscadine grape because it is here and it's easy to do. So, yes, Florida, number nine in the country in wine production. That's something there. This, I thought, was very interesting. A recent claim by Dean Frenkel, who is a lecturer in public speaking and communications at Victoria University in Australia, says that the distinct Australian accent that we hear all the time, that we can immediately pick out as Australian accent, actually came from the fact of the Aussie speak is because of alcohol. It's an alcoholic slur. Our forefathers regularly got drunk together and through their frequent interactions unknowingly added an alcoholic slur to our national speech patterns, he says. For the past two centuries, from generation to generation, drunken Aussie speak continues to be taught by sober parents to their children. Drunken Aussie slur. Frenkel said poor communication was not related to class, but was evident among all sectors of Australian society. He said the average Australian speaks to just two-thirds capacity, with one-third of our articulator muscles always sedentary, as if we're laying on the couch and there's not much concern for articulation. Missing consonants can include missing T's, as in Portland, missing I's, as in Australia, and S's, as in yes. While many of our vowels are lazily transformed into other vowels, especially A's to E's, as in Stinding, and I's, as in New South Wales, and I's and O's, and to Noit, as in not. He said that he's telling to Australian schools to teach proper English and to get away from the clever country slang that Australia has and actually start teaching it. They said the Australian drawl has cost the country billions of dollars over time, and it's time to start in the education circle. Basic education commonly refers to the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, but there is a missing R and a gaping hole in the Australian education system, and that is rhetoric. If we all received communication training, Australia would become a cleverer country. it's says the academics' comments were met with equal praise and incredulity from readers, including Australians from those and those from other countries. Australians have a serious speech impediment, he says. As someone born in India, left India at the age of 24 and spent 10 years in America and then moved to Australia, my spoken English is far more clear and much easier to understand than that of a vast majority of the Australians, said one Indian national. Several people have told me so, including Australians. Another dismissed his article as silly and elitist. Communication is still is all about understanding. If we Australians can understand each, then that's good enough. The regional differences are far less than the differences found within the U.S. and the United Kingdom. I have a German friend who can't understand the German that those who live in Bavaria speak. So there you go. It's because they were lazy, alcoholic, drunk bums when they first came to this country because of the residents, the convicts and settlers from Britain and Ireland and stuff like that. And so they drank all the time and they slurred their language and that became the Australian accent. Oh, well. we'll end it on that note.
Okay.
Yeah, really.
That's a story and we're sticking to that.
And we're sticking to it. That's right.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Yeah,
all right. That was good. There was something else. I was the wine dosage. I can't wait to see that. I wrote down some of them and I lost track. But I one bottle, is that per day for obesity? You have to drink one bottle?
Yeah, one bottle for let's see, where is it here? Let me, for diarrhea, one bottle of champagne a day.
Oh,
okay. One, if you have diarrhea, one bottle of champagne a day.
It was one bottle for obesity, and I wrote, is that per day? And I didn't know if that was per day or just, you know, whatever. That's a wow.
Yeah, I think those are daily. Yes, daily doses is what he said here. These are daily doses. For obesity, one bottle of Syrah a day. And well, you won't be eating. Obviously, you'll be drinking all the time.
Mm-hmm. You won't be working.
Maybe you'll develop an Australian accent.
You won't be driving anywhere. You won't be working.
But yeah, I'll type this into the Facebook page. I copied this off of something I saw, and I'll type it into the Facebook page. But yeah, it's just a little bit of tongue in cheek. You know, since you know, he said he visited and noticed that many of the specimens were preserved in alcohol. So why not just embalm ourselves before death instead of after? So.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. Yeah. Awesome. I took a bunch of notes on this one. That was that was a lot of stuff there. Okay. Yeah. Well, we will get ready to close the show here. You don't have a wine fest this weekend or a wine class.
Nope.
Don't show the yeah. You just had one actually on last weekend. Yeah. Busy weekend. Let's see, and the tip jar last month at the winery, Florida State's winery, was for Quantum Leap Farms. It's an equestrian therapy farm. Collected over $200, so that was awesome. Thank you for coming in and doing that. And this month's tip jar is for Friends of the Library at Land O'Lakes Library. It's an interesting thing. They read to kids. They promote reading to children and have reading programs for all ages. And this is books. Books, I believe, are still made with paper.
They are.
Okay, yeah. Mine are electronic, but that's fine. I haven't really seen a book in a while.
I know. A lot of people haven't, yeah.
1,000-page one that they put in my car for some reason. I'm not going to read through that. But anyway, maybe... that's a good cause. So come on by Florida State's winery and put a little something extra in the tip jar. It's right up there by the main counter, front counter, before you, when you come in or before you leave. And, you know, add a little something to it, and it goes to a good cause. So stop by the winery this month and give a little something. When you visit. Also, you can bring in a donation of pet food for Raffle Rescue. And you'll get a 10% discount on your wine purchase. So come on down to Florida State's Winery and bring some pet food, and it goes to a good cause as well. Also, the Florida State's Winery is pet friendly. Make sure they're vaccinated and leashed. That's always a welcome thing there. And you're going to enjoy your pet, and your pet will enjoy the winery as well. So stop by. You don't have to be separated or leave them someplace else. You can bring them with you when you come in. That is Florida State's Winery, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Awesome. And I guess we will see everybody. Where is? There it is. Okay. We'll see everybody next Thursday, which is January the 28th. Right here on Blog Talk Radio at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. It is 8 p.m. now. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great week, and keep drinking wine. And if you're obese, drink a bottle every day. So cool.
Oh, really? Thank you all for listening.
Thank you. We'll see you next time.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida State's Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@flune.com. That's corp@flewn.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.